You're tuned into the Awakening Zone Radio Network, your news and information source for empowered spiritual awakening.
Welcome to InnerSpeak Soul Adventures, your consciousness connection. Jean Adrian and her guests will be providing you the tools to empower you in creating the life that you desire. Now, here's your host, Jean Adrian.
Good evening and welcome to InnerSpeak Soul Adventures, your ultimate consciousness program. Every week we open the portal to the field of pure potential so that we can walk together hand in hand into the universe of conscious creation. I am Jean Adrian. I'm your host and your tour guide on this adventure, and it's my mission to bring you information from many sources to assist you as you make your choices and raise your vibration, because together we're creating the new reality, and I'm thrilled that you've chosen to join me here. I commit to you, I'm going to bring you information every week that's going to challenge you to grow, plus I'll provide you with power tools to use while you do. Please visit my website, jeanadrian.com, and while you're there, don't forget to sign up for my newsletter, and I'll send you a link for a free subscription to the online version of my InnerSpeak cards. Now, you know, we've got a very powerful eclipse coming up on Thursday of this week, and I got to tell you, I'm already rocking and rolling with it. I had a computer crash this afternoon, so if you are in the chat room, you're going to notice that I am obviously absent from the chat room. I'm having to run the show tonight from the switchboard on my Nook. That is called being technologically challenged, because it can only do one thing at a time, and I cannot go back and forth from the switchboard to the chat room. So I apologize to each and every one of you out there, but I'm not going to be able to look at or respond to chat room tonight. So if you have questions for my guests or for me, please call in. The number is area code 714-364-4335. And enough of these apologies. Let's get going with tonight's show. You know, none of us are getting any younger, right? So in tonight's Soul Adventure, we're going to gain perspectives on how to live more consciously and age wisely, and get a host of practical and relevant recommendations on specific choices each of us can make in order to lead more satisfying and successful lives. George and Sedina Capanelli are the co-founders of Age Nation. They're experts on societal, organizational, and individual change. They're internationally known consultants and coaches. Under the Age Nation banner, George and Sedina have created a unique multi-platform media and events environment that features AgeNation.com, Age Nation Radio, Navigating Your Future, a live and online conference and learning platform, Next, a new digital magazine, and Age Nation Consulting, their innovative consulting and coaching division, to bring solutions to the fastest growing audience in the country and into the organizations that serve them. And most recently, the Capanellis announced the formation of the World Council of Wisdom Keepers. Its founding members include Ram Dass, Angeles Ariane, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Dr. Gladys McGarry, the Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith, Jean Houston, and more. And George and Sedina are also the authors of a brand new best-selling book, which we're going to talk about tonight, Do Not Go Quietly, A Guide to Living Consciously and Aging Wisely for the People Who Weren't Born Yesterday. And they have also got two other books, Say Yes to Change, 25 Keys for Making Change Work for You, and Authenticity, Simple Strategies for Greater Meaning and Purpose at Work and at Home. Welcome, George and Sedina.
Jean, it's George representing the duo tonight. I apologize. Sedina's having a little challenge with her own schedule and wasn't able to get back here in time for the show, but I promised to speak in dual voices and communicate the essence of what we have to offer, and it's a pleasure to be with you tonight, Jean.
You know, and I want to also thank you, because a couple of years ago you filled in at the last minute for a guest who I found out, I think like 10 minutes before the show, that couldn't be there, and we had a fabulous show. So I've been so excited for two reasons. One, to get to talk to you again, but two, you know, I'm one of these people. I just started Medicare February the 1st, so I'm in this group that is really looking at living the last, let's just say the last half of my life, in peace, love, joy, fully conscious, and just milking it for all it's worth. So I want to hear what I need to do that.
Well, I think the first thing that you have to do, you're already doing, and that is to, you know, be vitally engaged in your life. And you certainly are, and the work that you bring to your listeners and all of the great information, I think that's a second aspect, because those of us who have arrived at this point in our lives clearly have a reasonable amount of experience. We've done our own trips and stumbles, and we've had our own breakthroughs, and that's a sure formula for intelligence and wisdom in the second half of life, and sharing that with others is really essential. And so what you do on the air, what we do with our books and our own work, Underage Nation, it's all designed to assist people to, as you say, and as the subtitle of our book suggests, to live more consciously and to age wisely. And that's our mission, you know, as it is yours, clearly, you know.
You know, I think it really is a new paradigm, George, because I was thinking about this the other day, I think as I was preparing for the show tonight, and I tried to remember my parents and my aunts and uncles, and that when they hit the retirement age, you know, they were kind of like old and shriveled up, and, you know, they really, it's like they were done. You know, they seemed to project that they had done everything they came here to do, and they were just like going to fade away now, you know. And I don't think that I know anybody in my age group that is doing that today.
No, I think we have had a quantum shift in consciousness, and I think that, you know, because there have never before been as many people on the planet alive at any one time who are 50 and over as there are today, and there will be even more over the course of the next several decades. Clearly, we are being given this additional time for a reason. There's a reason that so many 50 and olders are alive at the same time. And I think a lot of it has to do with what you say, that we are not the same as our parents or grandparents. Not that they did not lead valued or relevant or vital lives, but I think their expectations of what that meant and when they could hang up their cleats was much different than that which we exist today. You know, a lot of us are not even reaching our prime, and we're in our 60s or 70s, and some in our 80s, and still working the things that are important to us. And I think I think we have a fundamental role to play in the future of the world. And I think, you know, deciding what that role is and writing a new script is part of our challenge at this time in our lives.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the old paradigm really bought into that, that their lot in life was 70, you know?
Yes.
And
yep.
I don't know why. Because if you look back through written history, certainly back in the Bible, you know, people lived into hundreds of years. And maybe that was metaphor, maybe not. I don't know. But I really believe that, you know, it changed. Somewhere along the way it changed where our lifespan got shortened, and we kind of bought into that, you know. And,
well, and indeed, Jean, in some ways, you know, it did get shortened. If you think about it, when our country was founded at the end of the 16th, 17th, 18th century, you know, the average lifespan was literally late 30s, early 40s.
Right.
I mean, that was an... Now, there were certainly a number of exceptions to the rule, But by comparison, we're now at a place where the average lifespan is someplace between 78 and 80. And if we listen to our futurists, the projections are that over the course of the next several decades, that lifespan will expand, into the late 80s and 90s, and people can look to a large number of people who are 100 and over and still alive. I mean, we have some close to 5 million people in that category now.
Exactly.
So this is an extraordinary time. What an exciting and challenging time to be alive, you know?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I mean, I look at myself and, you know, at 65 years old, I don't really see myself any differently than I saw myself when I was 30. And there's really nothing that I can't do except have babies that, you know, than I did when I was in my 30s. Now, there are a lot of things I choose not to do because I'm a lot wiser than I was when I was in my 30s, you know. But there's nothing preventing me from doing the things that I did then. You know, so I don't see any reason for that to change, for a long time. And so I want to really know, what are some of the keys to living to the fullest for the rest of the way. I think that's what your book is about. So can you tell us a little bit about your book? What's it about, and why did you write it?
Well, let's. If I may, I'll answer the second question first. My wife and I, Sedina and I, both made passages, late in life and then end of life passages, with both sets of our parents. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, Jean, we were Sedina and I were relative innocents at that point on the topic of aging and health care and life care and a variety of the issues that are involved. I mean, when I grew up, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, lived with us, and she spent the last years of our lives, her life, in our home, and that's where she passed away, and she had family around her, and that was still the way that the passage was made for many of us. But in the next generation, many of us as children moved away from the geographies of our birth, and we lived in different parts of the country. And so when it came time for our parents to age and enter that phase, it was a whole different set of conditions. Now, in some parts of the American culture, in the indigenous tribes and still largely in the Hispanic communities, there is still an enormous amount of family support. But in the Anglo population, some of that has dissipated. And so Sedina and I were shocked at the challenges that were involved in trying to guide our parents in decisions they needed to make and making sure that they had the right kind of care and support. And we also found that it was extraordinarily expensive to keep our folks at home with full-time health care. And in addition, it was really hard to find enough quality health care workers who could support our parents. And then we found out that we weren't alone, that there were a lot of people making this passage, trying to mm-hmm. figure it out. We discovered there was no blueprint, you know, there was no script we could follow. We had to kind of make it up on our own. And that was really the birth of Do Not Go Quietly, because we realized that something had to be done. And the more we talked to leaders in business and leaders in government, we realized that America had its head in the sand on this conversation about an aging population. And to a large extent, it still does. So that's where Do Not Go Quietly began. And we realized we wanted to tell a really comprehensive story about this time of life. And we also wanted to give inspiration through stories about both ordinary and well-known people who have achieved some really remarkable things late in life. We wanted to give some practical guidance and some insight. And we wanted to conduct a conversation with our reader. And so it's a five-part conversation in which we begin with as things are now in our world, and then we move into a section that are concepts and questions and encouragements for the road ahead. And part three is about harvesting the wisdom of our past. And part four is learning to live in the now and take the essential steps on this road to living what we call the life that we were born to live. And then section five is about charting the course. So it's filled with great ideas and practical things that people can do and use in their lives. And one of the first things that we suggest is that we take an honest look at the world as it currently is and the parts that we have played, either by commission or omission, in allowing some of the things that currently exist to come into being. So that's why and where we begin, and wherever you'd like me to take it, as in terms of, you know, a lot of the practical tools and the guidance we give, I'd be delighted to do that.
Well, cool. So let's first talk about your audience, you know, because you, this book is written for people who weren't born yesterday, and I certainly consider myself to be in that. In fact, something happened to me really funny the other week where somebody acted like I was born yesterday, and you know, I wanted to get in this person's face and just go, "What do you think? I just fell off the turnip truck yesterday?" You know, I've got some wind beneath my wings on this one, and I'm not going to, you know, allow you to pull wool over my eyes. But who do you include in this group of people who weren't born yesterday?
Well, we use the phrase, first of all, because we've found over the years that people have objection to certain labels. Some people don't like to be called seniors. Some people don't like to be called elders. Some people don't like to be called olders or whatever. So we decided that we wanted to capture our constituency in a way that would make people smile a little bit, nod and acknowledge the fact that it's true that they weren't born yesterday. They have a lot of experience, a lot of wind in their sails, as you say, you know. And so our core audience really is comprised of older Gen Xers that are, you know, 40 to 45, boomers who are 46 to 64, and then elders who are 65 plus. But we also speak to young people who are awake and alert and recognize that they're just about to inherit this world in which 50%, according to many experts, of the population in all of the industrial countries of the world will be 50 and over for the first time in history. And the implications of that are astounding. And the burden that is going to fall on young people in a world in which longevity is increasing, birth rates are decreasing, and the tax base is shrinking. So that's like a perfect storm that is brewing. And unless our leaders in Washington and in business and in other capitals around the world, unless they wake up, and unless we, and that's something you said before that's so important, we have to be responsible. We can't wait for wet behind the ears congressional people who are half our age, have half of our experience, and in many times half our compassion. We can't let them decide what the rest of our lives is going to be like. We've got to be responsible for that ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, and I applaud you for taking a stand on this and for actually getting it out. into the mainstream so that people can become more aware. Yeah, because I think I was one of those people who really didn't want to, quote unquote, grow old. I mean, I'm going to color my hair until I'm in the coffin. You know, that's just not going to change. Then I began to realize that there were a lot of benefits that go along with stepping into eldership. A lot of financial benefits. I get a lot of discounts, not to mention, you know, a nice discount at Kroger every Wednesday when I do my grocery shopping with all the other blue-haired old ladies. You know? So there are some real positive things that can happen to us if we don't just give up.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, some of the positive things are, I think, that, we live in a very approval-based society, you know. Everybody's seeking somebody else's approval, and everybody's trying to measure up to some trend or standard or whatever it happens to be. But the nice thing about getting on in years is all of a sudden you say to yourself, boy, I'm not going to get caught in all that BS anymore. I don't need to do that. I don't, you know, I care more about how I'm feeling and what I'm doing and what's possible for me. I care more about the immediate relationships of my life. I also care about the legacy that I'm going to leave. So what the Joneses or the Smiths have to say about this or that, I don't care so much. I'm free of a lot of that social pressure, and I'm able to be more authentically myself. And what a gift that is, you know?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that legacy thing, that's really an important topic for, and I'd like to talk about that for a minute because, you know, I think for the first half of our lives primarily, we don't even think about that. You know, what kind of legacy am I leaving behind? But I would like to call out to everyone who's listening to this show tonight that if you've not thought about your legacy, today or tonight might be a really good time for you to do that. And I would ask you to sit down and write your own obituary. What would you want to have said about you when you decide to make the transition to leave the earth plane? And if you can't think of anything to put in that, then maybe you might want to chart a course for starting now to create your legacy.
Great
just
advice.
A thought.
Yeah,
just a thought.
It's great advice. And the fact of the matter is, you know, sometimes when people think about legacy, they think about some major estate that's made up of, you know, economic resources and stocks and bonds and 401ks and property and all the rest of it. But the truth of the matter is, while some of that is certainly present for some people, and varying degrees it's present for almost everyone, the truth of the matter is some of the most important aspects we believe of the legacy that we leave are the qualities and characteristics that we've demonstrated, the experience and wisdom that we've accumulated, the gifts of understanding and the gifts of insight that we can share with others. Because, you know, we believe, as do many others, that each of us comes here with a unique gift to give. And if we have been courageous, if we've listened to the prompts of the inner voice within, and we're willing to follow those suggestions, we get eventually to contribute that note that only we can sing in what has been called the great song of life. And so that's the legacy of greatest consequence. Now, in addition to that, our generation, older Gen Xers, boomers, and elders, are going to oversee the largest transfer of physical wealth in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And so another question that we have to ask ourselves is, what are we going to do in transferring that wealth? Are we simply going to give it to our heirs, which is certainly something that is traditional in the world, or can we find a way to give some portion of the work of a lifetime back to society to help those in need, to help organizations that are accomplishing great good in the world? So legacy has so many different meanings to different people, but thinking about it as you counsel is really a tremendously valuable process. And we spend some time in the book, especially in part five about charting a remarkable course for the future. We spend some time talking about legacy. And we also spent some time talking about what we can't take with us, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, all we can take with us, truthfully, is just our soul. Mm-hmm. Because that's really all we are anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, and the...
What are some of the things on your list of the things that you can't take with you?
Well, of course, all of the physical material things that so many of us spend such an awful lot of time worrying about, you know. Those are certainly things that we can't take with us. We can't take with us our degrees. We can't take with us our credentials. We can't take with us, all of the ego stuff. We can't take with us all of the tangible, the artworks, the collectibles, the golf clubs, the options, the gold watches, and the long-term health insurance. We can't take our breast implants or our scars or our warts or people we like or people we dislike.
Anyway, right?
No, they're not. They're not. They're just things that occupy our lives and that somehow or another we think are so terribly important that we go to great lengths at times to be inhospitable, unkind, ungenerous, and a whole lot of other things, because somehow or another these things seem so important until we realize that none of them are going to make the passage, not a one, except, as you say, those extraordinary learnings, those things that the soul has come here to understand and to practice and to develop and evolve, those we get to take with us
exactly.
And contribute back to the great collective, you know?
So another piece of the admonition for listeners tonight is that, spiritual work, your spiritual growth is something that probably is more important than any material wealth you could amass in any single lifetime.
Hard,
that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. Hard message,
for
a nation like ours that is still clinging tenaciously to the values and standards that were created during the Industrial Revolution in the 19th century and the Age of Reason that preceded and surrounded it. Somehow or another, during that time, productivity and performance became the new gods that were worshipped. And so the only way you judge that is economic return or revenue. And so we now see the final tail of that rather shaky story that was told and started then manifesting today, where the only thing of consequence, the only thing that's discussed in Washington these days are dollars and cents, as if it was the only subject of consequence. There are no other values, no other characteristics that we truly admire and respect. And so we've arrived in this conversation that's all about deficit spending and budget austerity and all of the rest of it. But where's the joy? Where's the Where's the beauty? Where's the wonder? Where's the investment in life? Where's the flow and the sense of abundance? I mean, the world has become so focused on scarcity and lack, and yet all around us is enough abundance, if it were well shared, to sustain every living being on this planet with all that they would need.
Exactly. You know, and I guess my answer to that, I know that was a rhetorical question, but my answer to that is that the only place where you can find that beauty, love, joy, and peace is within yourself individually. And when enough of us get there, you know, and that's why you guys are doing what you're doing, and that's why Awakening Zone is here to support people who are doing the same kind of thing. You know, we're changing this world one heart at a time. I believe we are.
I believe you're right, and I believe, you know, that's another reason why Sedina and I have written Do Not Go Quietly, because one of the things, although it's a clarion call, and we're inviting the members of these generations to, if they're sitting on the couch or leaning back, to get back up on their feet and to remember who they are and the power and the nobility and the experience they have. But rather than taking all that and rushing out into the world and trying to do something, the first thing that we advise is what you've just said. Go back inside. Evaluate what lessons are still unlearned, what work inside of you remains undone. And then when you do some of that work and you regain a greater balance, a greater harmony, a greater sense of inner connectivity to spirit and to understanding, then what you do in going out into the world is done from that place of balance. And we're not perpetually revisiting the same sins generation after generation upon the world.
Absolutely.
So it's that inner landscape that's the first place we need to revisit and do some important work.
You know, and I think that's the key to all of it, especially because the next thing I want to talk about is health and wellness. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I, for one, plan on running, you know, all the way to my transition. You know, I want to be vital and scuba dive and do all the other stuff that I do, as long as I choose to do it. And I don't plan on going quietly. So what do you see as the role of wellness, and what are some of the things that we can do to lead healthier lives and more vital lives?
Well, clearly I think there are a whole set of physical and tangible things that we can do, you know, in terms of paying attention to our diet, paying attention to the quality and the type of food and nourishment that we digest, the amount of exercise that we do, the amount of rest that we get, all of the things that we have been told for a long time lead us to take the very best care of the physical instrument that we have. Now, some of us are not as blessed as others with physical instruments that are as mobile or as strong or whatnot, but no matter where we are on the spectrum, I think with good diet, with good exercise, with good focus, with meditation, with reflection, with quality connections in our lives, we have the opportunity to live the best life within the physical instrument that we have. Then on top of that, I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
On top of that, I think that there are a number of emotional things that we can do. We can clean up our inner house, as we talked about. We can certainly complete a number of the incompletes in our lives, or at the very least, we can declare some of those things that we're never going to do complete, so that we can inherit the energy that we have tied up thinking about, worrying about, wondering, trying to figure out how to do those things. We have a chapter in the book on incompletes and on making a list of all the things that we've promised to do, be, or share, or whatever, and fix, you know, clean up, and either get to the completing of those things or cross them off your list and be free of them, you know?
Exactly. You know, I think one of the things that that we need to consider, and this really kind of got in my face over the last few weeks, is letting go of old genetic beliefs and imprints, the stuff that we think that we we believe that we've inherited from our parents and our from our lineage, which are predispositions to health issues and this limit, that, well, my dad had heart disease, so I'm going to have heart disease. My mother had breast cancer, so I'm going to have breast cancer. Things like that, that a lot of us have this stuff running around in our subconscious mind. And actually, I did some work with one of the other hosts on Awakening Zone. Last week, I did some work with Dee Wallace on letting go of the genetic imprints that we have to age and die. You know, that we have to deteriorate our bodies in order to make the ascension, because we've had this stuff stuffed in our heads for so long that that's the way you had to do it. So at a very deep and unconscious level, we've started taking our bodies apart, falling apart, so that we could, die and ascend. And that's not what we have to do anymore. So we got to let go of that kind of stuff.
Yes, and I think there are whole categories of what can be called or defined as limiting beliefs. We ask a question in a chapter in Do Not Go Quietly, and the question is, whose beliefs are you living?
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm talking about here.
Yes, because many of us do. We're young. We're relatively innocent. We're looking to parents and teachers and siblings and relatives and coaches and spiritual leaders and a whole set of people. We look to them for guidance and input, and a lot of them are more than willing to download on us a whole set of beliefs that were downloaded on them. And many of us never stop to ask, where the heck did that belief come from? I mean, was it truly written on a tablet and it descended from the heavens? Or was there some schmuck just like me in some other place wandering in the dark trying to figure things out, and he or she decided that, it was supposed to be left-handed or right-handed, or you're supposed to stand up and salute or sit down or do whatever you do? And so those beliefs get perpetuated, and as you say, they get encoded in the cellular memory, and we live as if they were true. So we invite people to identify some of the major beliefs they have about any number of subjects, and aging, since it's a topic of the book, is certainly one of those. What are the beliefs you have about aging? As you say, do you believe that the body has to deteriorate? Do you believe that you have to get stiff? Do you believe that you can no longer have any kind of physical pleasure after a particular time in life? Do you believe what? That your hair has to fall out, or that you have to suffer the same calamities as your ancestors? And if not, then what do you believe? And even more than believe, one of the things we point out is that there's a distinct and radical difference between believing and knowing. And our world largely is based on other people's beliefs. It's
Absolutely.
One of the reasons that we need all of these translators and interpreters and whatnot who, frankly, don't know a heck of a lot more and sometimes know a hell of a lot less than we know.
For sure.
Carl,
the interesting thing about those beliefs, they can change in a skinny heartbeat. They can change just that fast. I'm going to tell a story on myself, because those of you who have been listening to me on the air now for the last 7 years know that I'm famous for just telling it like it is and opening the kimono and showing my own foibles. So I'm going to share one with you, because to me this is just so powerful. So February the 1st, I became eligible for Medicare. I have been healthy as a horse, other than the fact that I don't have a thyroid, for 64 years, right? Never go to a doctor, have no need to. I don't really do allopathic medicine. I do a lot of alternative. I mean, I do a lot of chiropractic and acupuncture, but those are my maintenance tools. And so I start on Medicare, and the first thing you got to do is go get yourself a primary care physician. And all of my blood work, because I have to have blood work done every year, twice a year because of my thyroid, and always everything has just been, all the markers have been perfect, healthy. So I go to my new little primary care physician, and she's a wonderful little lady, and she says, okay, so I'm going to draw your blood today so we can start, getting your thyroid hormones, make sure that everything is the way it's supposed to be. And she calls me back 2 days later, and she says, I got your thyroid blood results back, and I don't understand this. I can't prescribe for you. I'm going to have to send you to an endocrinologist. And, oh, by the way, when you were in here the other day, your blood pressure was high. And I was like, okay, fine, but I needed my thyroid pills, so I said, I went on to the endocrinologist figuring, okay, so she doesn't know what she's doing with thyroid, and this guy will. And when I went into his office for my first visit, the first thing they do is stick you on the scale, and then they take your blood pressure. My blood pressure was 187 over 92. My blood pressure has never been over 136 over 70-something in my entire life, ever. And I was like, surely your blood pressure cuff is wrong. And they said, well, let us check it again. And it was the same thing. And after I met with the doctor, he wanted to check it again, and it was still the same thing. And I was like, what? So I became obsessed with my blood pressure, went out and bought a blood pressure cuff, and I started checking, and it was all over the place. And this went on until I sat down last week with Dee. And, we did some balancing around that. And it was just this old genetic belief, the one that I just said, that, in order to be able to make my ascension, I got to deteriorate this body and die and erase that, because that was the old belief. And once I recognized that, my blood pressure has been bloody normal ever since then. I've still checked it. I've gone back to check it just to make sure, and it's like today was 136 over 72. So it was a belief that I bought into that got triggered by this Medicare thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that simple how we step into these traps that can keep us from living the conscious, vital life that that you're talking about here, and do not go quietly. So lay it down, people. You don't have to do it the old way. We're creating a new reality here. And you in your book, you've got some life tools that you talk about in there. Can you share some of the life tools?
Well, each chapter has at the end of each chapter there's a life rule, which is generally a quote or a thought by someone, a life achievement that identifies someone who is 50 or older, some famous and some not, who have done remarkable things in the latter stages of their lives. And then there's a thing called life tool, which is a recommendation or thought that you can utilize and practice in any way that you care to. So if I go to, we were talking about this chapter of what you can't take with you, and
mm-hmm.
The life rule in that chapter says, where the spirit does not work with the hand, there is no art. And that's a quote by Leonardo da Vinci. In addition to writing, I sculpt, and I know how true that is. When I'm not surrendered, when I'm not allowing love and the spirit of true creativity and energy to flow through me, then there is no art. There might be an object that I create, but it doesn't have a vitality and a unique expression and a beauty that emanates from it. It's only when I get out of the way that that begins to happen. The life achievement in this chapter happens to be there's a woman that we know whose name is Shana D, and she's the great-granddaughter of Geronimo, and she's 88, and she still leads groups of people in learning Native American practices and rituals, you know. And she's certainly someone who's spry and energetic at 88, and she inspires us. The life tool in this chapter is as you go through your day, we invite you to continue to pay attention to those things you can and those things you can't take with you. Perhaps you will be encouraged to focus a lot less on the things you can't take with you and a lot more on the things that you can and will. So they're practical recommendations. They're ideas to think about or things to do. We have a chapter called The Gift That Keeps On Giving, and the gift that keeps on giving from our standpoint is the gift of forgiveness. A lot of us, a lot of us go through our lives having experiences called guilt, where we hold against ourselves some issue or action or event that's occurred that we feel badly about. Or we carry with us degrees of resentment about those actions or things or events that other people we feel are responsible that have somehow hurt us or pained us or injured us in some particular way. And so we just remind our readers that by forgiving ourselves and by forgiving others, it's like we put down all these bags and burdens that we're carrying, because the absence of forgiveness doesn't punish anyone ultimately but ourselves.
Exactly.
As long as we continue to feel guilty about something, we traditionally don't do anything to resolve that thing that we feel guilty about. Whether we resolve it internally or externally doesn't matter. What matters is that we forgive ourselves for living a life in which we have made some stumbles and we've learned from those stumbles. And certainly we don't punish anyone else by being resentful, because we're the ones that are moving around with a closed heart and a limited consciousness. And if anything, we are doing ourselves and this instrument that we call our body a tremendous disservice by holding on to resentment or guilt. So that's why we say that it is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, and absolutely. And when you hold on to resentment and wounds and guilt and things like that, you end up, because the way the body works, they get stored inside our organs and glands, which just cause them to deteriorate and, and then cause us to age and die. So it doesn't serve us in so many ways. You have something in your book you talk about called crazy wisdom. What's that all about, George?
Well, throughout history, there have been numerous examples where there have been teachers who have provided unique and remarkable insight to others in non-linear ways. For an example, the poet Rumi had a long-term friendship with an individual who broke him out of his normal ruts of perception and taught him to learn to live outside of the lines. There's a guy, what the heck is his name? His name, David Ogilvy. David Ogilvy was one of the creators of one of the largest and most successful advertising agencies in America, Ogilvy and Mather. And David used to say all of the time that rules are for the guidance of wise men and the obedience of fools. He wasn't trying to be insulting. He was trying to be inspiring. He was trying to say that rules are designed to give us some markers, some boundaries that we can look at and experiment with and come to understand more about our own nature and life by practicing. But if we always stay within the lines, then we become rigid and boundaried, and the rules become more important than our lives. So by being curious, by being willing to experiment and investigate, by going outside of the lines and living with this thing called crazy wisdom, we actually come to understand and know life rather than vicariously considering what life might be. There was an author by the name of Thomas More who wrote a series of very well-known books. Maybe the best one was called Care of the Soul. And one of the things that Thomas More reminds us is that the soul seems to thrive in less than perfect places, you know, places where there aren't any straight and rigid lines, where there's a reasonable amount of ambiguity and uncertainty present. So crazy wisdom are those spontaneous, unique, imaginative things, those thoughts that come up encouraging us to do something, and then that old rigid self of ours says, oh, I can't do that, oh God, that's not acceptable, or that's not what my mother taught me to do, or that's not what this belief suggests. And yet sometimes, instead of sitting in the chair at the dance, we actually get up and dance. We throw caution to the wind, and we kick up our heels, and we laugh, and we celebrate, and we taste food we thought we could never taste, and all of a sudden life becomes vital again, you know? So that's the crazy wisdom that we suggest.
Cool. Wow. This has been so much fun, George. Just like this last time I had you on my show, it's been a great show. For those who joined us late, I'm speaking with George Capponelli about his new book. And the book is called Do Not Go Quietly, A Guide to Living Consciously and Aging Wisely for People Who Weren't Born Yesterday. And I hated that your wife, Sedina, couldn't be with us, but I'm glad I got you tonight. George, which website would you like the listeners to go to find out more about y'all and what you're doing and to find your book as well?
Well, the book website is donotgoquietlythebook.com, and folks can go there and learn a lot more about the book and read about a number of the testimonials and support for it. They can also download a chapter free, and they can download a poem that opens the book called Do Not Go Quietly. If they want to find out more about our work with people who weren't born yesterday, they can go to agenation.com. That's agenation.com. And they can buy the book, of course, online at Amazon, and they can buy it at Barnes & Noble and great bookstores everywhere. We certainly encourage folks to do that.
So what's next for George and Sedina?
Well, next is expanding the work that Age Nation does, expanding the work that a nonprofit that we've created does, because our commitment is to make the world age-friendly, and our commitment is to help to return a level of honoring and support for elders and an incorporation of the wisdom of elders into our society, because every society that has continued to listen to its elders has endured and prospered, and every society that has stopped listening has imploded, and we're in a tipping point right now, you know. That's our work.
Agree. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy week to share about Do Not Go Quietly with me and with the listeners tonight. And best of luck with on your book, and best wishes for your work. And give my love to your wife as well.
I will. And Jean, thank you very, very much for having me. It's been a terrific conversation, and I celebrate and congratulate you for the work that you do, and encourage you to keep doing it, as I know you will, because you make a real difference. So thank you.
Absolutely, and you do too. Thank you. And I also want to thank all of the listeners tonight for supporting InnerSpeak Soul Adventures and for supporting The Awakening Zone. Please join me every week. I invite you to visit my website as well, jeanadrian.com. Check it out. Click the link. Get your own copy of my new book, Power Tools, if you haven't already gotten one. And the list of gifts you get will just keep growing. All you've got to do is come back and put in your receipt number, and it opens the launch page for you. Next week, my guest on InnerSpeak Soul Adventures will be Dr. Joan C. King. We're going to be talking about cellular wisdom and living a life on purpose. So we're going to kind of continue what George and I have talked about tonight, and actually sort of the conversation that began last week with Barbara Schiffman. So join me again next week. Awakening Zone Radio is where you find information on a wide range of topics, but if you really want to dive into a single subject, check out Awakening Zone Academy. This week in Awakening Zone Academy, we're taking registration for a new workshop called Meditation, Your Pathway to Connection with Animals. This workshop has been created by Awakening Zone Radio host and professional animal communicator Asia Voigt. She says the first step is to quiet your mind and calm your body through meditation. And Asia's going to present 8 different methods of meditation so that you can find the one that's right for you. This workshop will get you one step closer to understanding what your pets are thinking and feeling. And so for more information, go to Asia Voigt, AsiaVoigt.com. And to register, go to awakeningzoneacademy.ning.com. Now, right after this show, in 3 minutes, Jim Self is going to start his show. So stay on the air with us at Awakening Zone and catch Jim Self's show tonight, and then all the fabulous shows that will be online tomorrow. We've got a full day for you tomorrow as well. And next week I'll be back with a computer that works, so I'll be playing in the chat room. So I'm really sorry about tonight, but it's just, you know, one of those things that happens. So until next week, remember, people who take responsibility for their lives create the reality they desire. Ciao.
You've been listening to the Awakening Zone Radio Network, offering insights and inspiration for our evolving consciousness.